We've been fighting a long time, and we have all lost so very much, so many loved ones gone. But you are not alone. There are pockets of resistance all around the planet. We are at the brink. You have no idea how important you are. If you're listening to this, you are the resistance.
Ave Maria.
Hey everybody, Steve with Sense Fidelium coming at you with Judson Carroll up in the mountains of North Kakalaki, which he isn't in the mountains right now. He's still in the same state I am, but he's just not up in the mountains right now. He's in another city in another climate. If we're playing the climate gate stuff that we hear about on news all the time. But anyway, I brought him on because some reason I started getting into gardening. And I saw his chat in a I think it was on Marshall when Taylor put a text out or a tweet out, and I saw him write something about I could feed a whole family for $10. And at first I went, that guy's a lunatic. And then I thought about going, wait a minute, I'm trying to do that now. Who is this guy? Let me look him up. I clicked on his profile. He has, I'll show you the website is right here, the Southern Appalachian Herbs, and start going. He's literally onto something, because if you do grow your own things, you can feed a family under $10. So I bought all his books, contacted him, he's got 4 or 5 books out, dug into 2 of them in the last couple of weeks, and went, I got to have this guy on. I'm thinking about starting a new channel just over on this kind of topic. So thankfully he said yes to it. And Judson, thank you for coming on. How you doing? Tell us a little bit.
Thanks. Glad to be here. First thing I always have to point out, when people hear my voice, they will notice a Southern accent. Do not worry. I am a convert. Entered the Catholic Church, I guess it was 20 years ago now. And that in itself is an interesting story. I actually ended up at, worked as a Methodist youth minister for a while, and ended up at Liberty University. And I went in there, and the first thing, like first day, they said, Catholics aren't allowed to read the Bible. And I'm like, wait a minute, the Catholics I know are allowed to read the Bible. I said, but I told them that. They said, we don't believe that. And then we went through, and as I learned what their doctrine actually was, I realized that was not a doctrine that agreed with the Bible. And then when I found out that Martin Luther had cut books out of the Bible, I got a real Bible and became Catholic pretty darn quickly after that. But family, actually, my carols are actually the carols from Maryland. So Charles Carroll's there, the decorator.
And all that?
Yeah, yeah. Really? He had a nephew. So first Catholic bishop. Moved to the Carolinas somewhere around 1820, but it was illegal to be Catholic in North Carolina until after, right before the Civil War. And so we lost our Catholicism, and I feel like I've taken it back, you know. Yeah. But centuries old family farms down in the eastern part of the state. And then I was born in the mountains, and my grandfather, when it comes to, you know, all the farming and everything, he was actually like a real pioneer of permaculture before it ever had a name. He was a natural engineer, so he built all these systems, you know, on the farm for so that the feed for the animals was being grown there, the manure from the animals was being composted down and used for fertilizers, water storage on the property. And, that's kind of how I grew up. It was like a natural prepper lifestyle, because that's how people had lived for a few hundred years. You know, the canned vegetables, and they had he even built a nuclear fallout shelter with its own designed by himself, water and electric and air filtration system. The man was just a genius, you know. So that's kind of the way I grew up. But in my teens, we moved back up the mountains where I was born, and I got into herbal medicine. I was actually really into foraging. I've just always loved to go to the woods, fishing and hunting, and just bringing back, you know, some kind of food. It's really part of my nature. And my mother said, you got to meet this guy I met down at the dump site. He was working at a refuse facility, you know. And it turned out to be Arvo Hicks, a famous storyteller. And he's from the Hicks family of Beach Creek. And I got to know him. We started talking foraging. We started talking storytelling and old time music and everything. And finally, you know, we became really good friends. He said, I got to take you up and meet Ray and Rosie. We go down like a 10-mile long back mountain dirt road on the backside of Avery County. And 200-year-old cabin, one electric light bulb. That's it. It's the only electricity. Wood cook stove, outhouse out back, well, I mean, the hand pumped well, whole deal. And they were herbalists. They made their living wild harvesting. We call that wild crafting herbs and selling them to herbal companies like Wilcox over in Asheville. And well, they had a location in Boone as well. And well, I learned herbalism from them as I learned storytelling and playing music. And we ended up traveling all over the place and had a great time playing music and telling stories at places like Merle Fest and going to Nashville and everything. And then, yeah, after 9/11, I totally walked away from that life, went up to Virginia, started working in politics, worked in politics for a good long while. And then 2008, the crash. I lost my business. I was back in the mountains and, you know, being self-employed, Obamacare pretty much wrecked my health insurance options. So I'm like, well, I better get back into herbal medicine. And by that time, you know, of course I'm Catholic. And I started looking around and thinking, you know, I was not brought up on herbal medicine that had any kind of new age spin to it. You know, these were very conservative Christian people, very traditional people. And I thought, there's got to be something out there. I started looking around, and I found German folk medicine. And that is a long tradition that, I mean, it goes back to, well, the early church, when the Benedictines started going out and putting up monasteries. They would establish free hospitals. You know, one of part of the Benedictine code, I can't remember what you call it, is, you know, care for the sick. And so the ancient Greek medicine, which became ancient Roman medicine, became the medicine of the Benedictines and a few other, religious groups. And that's what spread herbal medicine throughout Europe. They created the first hospitals. They created the first medical schools. In Salerno, Italy, it was actually, according to legend, a Catholic, a Jew, and a Muslim ended up shipwrecked together and started sharing their herbal information, and that became the first formal medical school in the world, you know. So I found German folk medicine, and I thought, this works for me, you know, and I put that together with my Appalachian knowledge and Native American herbal knowledge, and outside my back door was like everything I needed, you know. I mean, just amazing. And went and got a bunch of form. Well, I did actually study traditional Chinese medicine for about 10 years when I was younger. So sometimes I use some Chinese herbs, you know, but what I found through that was that herbal medicine was not only very Christian, but very Catholic. We have at least four saints of herbal medicine. It is just really cool. And that's when I started doing the research. Anyway, I got a bunch of certifications. I'm a certified master herbalist. I've got, I don't even know, like 570 hours of education, and all that stuff's still rattling around in my head. You know? But, you know, as far as the farming and everything, I also got certified in permaculture. And so we can talk a little bit about that. Biointensive gardening, if you want to talk about that. All kinds of stuff. All kinds of stuff. I took about a 50-some certification courses from an agricultural school. When it comes to whether it's herbs or growing food or cooking food, you know, I've written two cookbooks, so we can talk about that too.
I have. That's the main thing I wanted you to bring up, just to let people know that this isn't some we're both Southern. This isn't some hick just coming out of the woods and saying, hey, you know, do this. You actually have a background in it, and you've studied it pretty much. Here's the book on the Christian herbal medicine, the history of it. And I mean, this is not a thin book. I mean, it's 200.
Yeah, I don't write thin books.
I'm sorry?
Yeah, I don't write thin books. I would make more money if I did, because, you know, I can put a bigger cut of it. But no, a lot of my books are well over 600-700 pages.
Well, you bring, and there's like three pages. You brought up the St. Benedict thing. There's three pages of, and it was an exhaustive list of what they used in there. And it was actually when the book I wanted to bring up, because it was fantastic. It's just one, I couldn't put it down, was The Medicinal Herbs of Father Johann Kunzel, where you bring up the Benedict herb that I never heard of before. And by the time I'm done reading it, I'm ordering the seeds. Book made me spend about $15 in seeds that night because I'm looking, going, I'm telling my wife, did you believe this? Listen to this. And the fern, I mean, just all this stuff.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That, I mean, there's, I guess what we could bring up first is, where did this idea of all this new agey, where instead of this is what God gave us to use?
Yeah. Well, yeah. And, wow, this is, it's a big topic, but where the break actually came with like the new agey type stuff. Father Kunzel was very, actually he factors into this very, strongly. When early 1900s, the guilds were really starting to recede and the professional classes were starting to take over, and they started passing a lot of laws that said you can't practice medicine unless you've gone to accredited institution and you've got your licenses and your degrees, and really you're only allowed to use what we say you can use from the pharmacists, you know, from the drug companies. Before then, all medicine was plant-based. Well, most all medicine. I mean, sometimes they were using like mercury and such. That's not a good idea. But all medicine that was, you know, most all medicine was plant-based. And like if you go to a medical dispensatory from 1898, there's one you can look up online. It's called King's Medical Dispensatory. You'll find all the instructions for making every drug used in medicine from raw plant material. So, I mean, that's all they had, right? And that's what people practice. But after that, you start seeing everything become much more driven by the pharmaceutical companies, driven by the professional doctors associations and such as that. And they started gradually throughout the world making home medicine folk practice essentially illegal. Pure Foods and Drugs Act of 1914, 1916 in the United States essentially made herbal medicine illegal. Before then, I mean, they said it was to get rid of, you know, all these awful patent medicines. Well, you've probably heard of the term snake oil, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Snake oil is actually an oil of echinacea, which when a snake bites you, it's venomous. It has a necrotizing venom that starts to break down protein. Echinacea oil actually encourages the production of hyaluronic acid, which keeps that from happening. So, I mean, people say, oh, it's just snake oil. Actually, snake oil was like the very best thing for a snake bite or a black widow spider, brown recluse spider bite. And all they did was then just take that and try to duplicate it in test tubes in a lab and make it illegal for you to purchase. You now have to go through a pharmacist, right? Well, this was, of course, happening big time in Germany. And especially as the Nazis were starting to take over and everything, they were regulating everything. Well, Germany had this long history of folk medicine, dating, you know, all the way back to the Benedictines. The first herbal medicine book written in the Christian era was by Abbot Walafrid Strabo. Mm-hmm. He was the tutor to Charlemagne's grandchildren. He was one of the most influential writers in the early church, and he wrote an herbal book called Hortulus, and he, of course, was German. So mm-hmm. they had this really strong herbal tradition. And Father Kunzel got sued for giving people herbs to treat diabetes specifically. Went to court, and if you've read the book, you know he was fiery, he was feisty, he had a great sense of humor, but he didn't suffer fools gladly, you know. Mm-hmm. And he got up on the stand, and he proved that his herbs worked better than the doctor's prescriptions. And so German folk medicine was really about the only place in the Western world where it was truly legal to practice herbal medicine well into the 1900s. Now, they didn't lose their traditions in Poland. It's a very big part of their culture. They didn't lose their traditions in Russia. But, I mean, herbal medicine was essentially stamped out in France and in England. And they tried to do it here in the United States. Well, what happened was, in the early 1900s, you start getting that neo-pagan movement. Everybody started in the universities getting into like Druid lore and the old Norse gods and all that. And, you know, a lot of that really did lead to Nazism and, you know, such as that. And they started saying, the Christians took away our heritage. and we need to start using, you know, and they started, well, they wanted those pagan herbs. They wanted the witchy spells and potions and all kinds of stuff like that. So they, you know, they were doing seances and it was Edgar Casey and all that kind of thing. So they were, you know, there was a big movement that just say between 1890 to about 1930 or so, kind of faded away during World War II and the baby boom and the 50s and everything. So when the hippies come around in the 60s, the books they find were written by the neo-pagans of the early 1900s. They knew nothing of Abbot Wallaford Straube. They knew nothing of Father Knape. They knew nothing of Father Kunzel. And, you know, you get into a Marxist college classroom and they want to tell you how the bad Christians took everything away from the natives and wouldn't allow them to practice any their religion or their medicine or their folk cultures and everything. Meanwhile, think about quinine, which the Jesuits discovered from natives in Peru and basically saved the world from malaria. You know, so it's not a true narrative, but you know, if you talk to most people, they're so influenced by the 60s culture, the Wiccans and all that, which is very much influenced by the neo-pagan movement of the early 1900s.
Just in the history book you bring up, because I've thought about that too, going, how in the world, because I read the book, when I read this, now I'm looking at the ground and going, oh, that's, I was at a friend's house the other day and just went, dude, that's dead nettle.
Yeah.
I would have no clue what that was 2 weeks ago. I just, like I said, read the book. Look, I just remembered the photo of it because you have photos in the Father Kunzel book. Yep. And they're asking, what do you mean? The whole darn backyard was full of it. They had no clue what it was. And their kid was worrying about cold and having a little cold and fever thing. I go, dude, it's worse for cold. Try it out. Here's a video. Here's a YouTube video. How to do the leaves and make a tea out of it. Anyways, just, you know, from the dandelion to clover to that. Yeah. And it's going, well, how did, my wife would ask it too. How did somebody know that worked? And I think you bring that up in the history book that it's kind of like, in a sense, God, who Father Kunzel goes, imagine God stuck all this out in front of us for our benefits and we don't use it. Is right. Somebody, he had to have told somebody how to do what this does.
Right. Well, according to ancient Jewish legends, it's the Archangel Raphael. I guess really one of the patron saints of medicine, really. But, you know, like in the Bible, it says the waters were stirred in the pool of Siloam. The angel stirred the water and people were healed. There was this long history of this archangel with medicine, like the Book of Tobit, you know, when he takes the fish and turns it into a powder and says for Tobit to put it on his eyes, and it takes the Tobias to put it on his eyes, takes the scales off, he restores his vision. Throughout time, I mean, that's been believed to be the like angel of medicine, essentially. And according to these old Jewish legends, that was the angel who taught our first parents about herbal medicine. King Solomon was said to have knowledge of all plants, and that would include all medicinal plants. And of course, in between the flood, they taught Noah and his descendants all about herbal medicine. So from a Judeo-Christian perspective, herbal medicine is very, very much from God. And like in Sirach, you know, one of those books like Maccabees that I had discovered when I was in college, it says, you know, despise not the physician. God gave him his skill, you know. And at that time, that physician would have been an herbalist.
Yeah, so it's one of those like everyone's conditioned to put lawns. You got to get your lawn right. You got to make a green, little green, get rid of the weeds. And most of these that you're having, these would typically be called weeds, and you're out there grabbing it, throwing it, spreading, you know, some kind of poison on it to kill it. When it's literally, as like I said, when Kunzel brings up, you're killing stuff that helps you.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's pretty much like I would say the gist of the book is to get people to, hey, read this because you probably have a pharmacy in your backyard and don't know it.
Yeah, and see, most of what we call weeds are actually plants that were brought here by our ancestors for food and medicine, like dandelions. Dandelions were brought here for food. I don't even know how many millions of dollars is spent on Roundup every year trying to eradicate them. Burdock was brought here for food and medicine. Chicory, dead nettle, henbit, good King Henry or ground ivy, all these weeds that people try to get rid of, and wild onions. Well, we have some native wild onions. Some were actually brought here and have naturalized. Absolutely. It's amazing how much you will find in your backyard. I mean, like right now in North Carolina, anywhere east of Hickory, you're just going to see tons of dead nettle. That's what's turning the fields purple. Mm-hmm. You know, it is beautiful. And along with that, you're probably going to find wild mustard, mm-hmm. Maybe wintercress, a few other plants that are both edible and medicinal.
Yeah, I was like, you brought the dandelion. I was blown away that it had all those vitamin and minerals. And I'm going, what?
Probably the most nutritious green. And it can be a little bitter depending on where it's grown. Shade-grown dandelion is less bitter, and if you get it early in the season. But the blossoms are so nice. You can make a syrup out of it that's just like honey. You can make dandelion wine. You can use the root as a liver tonic. They're just wonderful. I love dandelions. I eat them all the time.
I was telling a friend of mine that I told him about the dead nettle that, yes, you had to check out his Rumble channel because he was eating a magnolia leaf flower the other day. And I had no clue. We were both born in the South. Going, I had no idea that I was medicinal.
I know. Yeah, that was a surprise to me. And another one you would really probably enjoy would be gardenia flowers.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know how that just strong perfumey scent. You don't want to use a lot, but yeah, they're delicious. Roses are edible if they're not sprayed with stuff. And, violet flowers. Right now, the red buds are in bloom throughout most of the state, and those red bud blossoms are delicious. They taste like sweet garden peas.
So, like I said, this stuff. I just dug into this a couple of weeks ago, and this is mind blowing on what's out there. Again, like the Saint Benedict herb and. You mentioned it here that the legend is that he blessed this particular herb and it's good for all this leaks. And it's
there's so many.
Society could be like, wow, you know, how much healthier we could be.
And
spend less money going to the doc if we just.
Oh, yeah. I have been to a doctor in probably 30 years plus. I remember the last time I did, I was when I was down in Georgia working as a youth minister, and me and this fellow, we went out to go fishing, right? And I mean, I've been in the woods all my life. I knew to tuck my boots in, my jeans in my boots, spray some deep woods off of there. You do not know what chiggers or red bugs are like until you are in the Georgia woods trying to catch some catfish. I came back covered in like 10,000 bites, right? They got infected. I had to go in and get a shot of antibiotic. And it was great. There was this the old doctor in town. He's one of the last old GPs. I mean, he was like, you know, a general practitioner, about 80 years old, only stood about 5 feet tall. I'm 6'4". I was a good 220 pounds at the time, you know. And he goes and he shoves that needle, you know, right into my butt cheek, hits the sciatic nerve. I blacked out, fell on him like a tree, and almost killed him. But yeah, there are a lot of herbs that actually are very much associated with saints and angels. And there's so many herbs named after the Blessed Virgin Mary. Milk thistle, for instance. Yeah, lady's mantle is one. Milk thistle. It said that some of her milk fell on the thistle, and that's why it has all the white streaks across it. There's St. Benedict's herb. There's another one that's like right on the tip of my tongue. Oh, sage. Sage was actually said to have hidden the Holy Family in their flight to Egypt. And a big sage bush, right? And she blessed it. And it's almost a panacea. Yeah, even going back to the ancient Greeks, Hippocrates said, why should a man die if sage grows in his garden? It's good for so many things. Sage is great for sore throat. It has antiviral properties. It will help with fevers. It'll even help reduce excess sweating. I mean, it's really interesting. You dry up mother's milk, excess menstruation. So many of these herbs have so much lore. I get into the lore, you know.
Oh, yeah, you know, it's cool. I remember seeing someone else bring up the red clover. The legend was that Eve took it while she was getting kicked out of Eden.
Yeah, I've heard that before. It's an interesting plant too. Red clover if you get into gardening, it's leguminous. It's a nitrogen fixing plant. It will actually pull nitrogen out of the air and fix it in the soil through a bacterial association with the roots. And so that's free fertilizer, yeah, right? And you can grow it instead of grass if you want to till it under or just plant a bed right on top of it. But the it has a lot of interesting properties too. But it's a really good herb for women because the flowers actually have phytoestrogens. Mm-hmm. It's actually an estrogenic plant. So I only throw a few blossoms in a salad every now and then. They're very tasty.
Well, I mean, I have a lime tree, key lime tree that died, and I went, yeah, forget about it. I got a couple lemons. We'll forget about the lemon. Literally sit down, and I do my normal thing. I have about four or five books. I read a chapter each. Pulled open this one. I went right to it. Go, oh, lime. It talks about how it's good for sore throat. You eat the leaves and things like that. Going, mm-hmm. Well, because I found another lime plant. Again. Never would have thought that the leaves of a lime. I told her that too. So this, you know, just yeah. I mean, get the book. Why did you? What intrigued you about the Kunzel book? I guess.
Well, he was such a pivotal figure. He was really the last famous herbalist priest, I guess. Before him, Father Knape had written the best-selling book next to the Bible in the entire world, and it was it was an herbal book. It was about, he had a system of using cold water. You might have, a lot of people these days are doing cold water baths for different health reasons, right? Yeah. Well, he cured himself of tuberculosis doing that and got into herbal medicine. And he wrote a book called My Water Cure. It was translated in like five different languages. It was the first book actually bootlegged. People make counterfeit copies of it and sell. That's how popular it was. So Father Kunzel comes along, about 90 years later, and he's doing his thing, and he had the court cases and all that. His book was the next, I mean, almost as popular as Father Knape's, and had it not been for the wars, when people didn't want to have anything in the German language in their home in England and America and all that, it probably wouldn't have gone out of print, but it did. It went out of print, right around the time of the wars, somewhere between World War I and II, basically. And it was lost. I could not find an English translation of it, and I don't speak German. And even when trying to find it in German, it was just in bits and pieces. So I met an herbalist named Jelana Wittib. She's Austrian. And I asked her, would you be interested in translating this book? Maybe we could do a new version of it. And she's like, well, let me take a look at it. She's like, this guy is hilarious. I'm absolutely going to do this. So she does her translation. And then we went through it as modern herbalists. And she gives her perspective as an Austrian. And I give mine, more from the British Celtic American tradition.
Yeah, that was a great line with fern. I think he said that the devil even runs from the fern or something like this.
Yeah, St. Hildegard was real big into that. I have a whole book on medicinal ferns, and she really inspired me to write that. I put all my work under her patronage. She said that the devil hates ferns. You got to remember she's writing in about, 1080? There's a lot of her herbal system medicine we don't understand. It's very spiritual. Everything, it's not just like take this herb for a sore throat. It's, there's a spiritual component to it, and always pray that God wills it. And if he doesn't will you get better, that it's for your benefit that you don't. She's very big into all that. But she said that ferns should always be placed in the home, grown around the home. She said that even if you had ferns in the house, it would keep your house safe from lightning. But she said, put a fern in with the baby's crib, just a fern frond, and it would protect it from demons. So she would, I don't know. She's a doctor of the church, though, so I got to take her advice, But yeah, there's St. Hildegard von Bingen, probably the greatest herbalist ever lived, one of our saints of herbal medicine. St. Fiacre of Ireland was the first, and he was known to be the greatest herbalist in his era. And to the point that he fled essentially from Ireland to France and holed himself up in a monastery to get away from everybody because they kept coming knocking on his door. And part of his, I guess it was part of his orders, he wasn't supposed to like have any contact with women at all. So he really had to like detach himself from everybody. But on the other hand, there was Gertrude Nivelle of Belgium. She's one of our patron saints. So if you want one that had more contact with women, you know, look at her. And then, of course, St. Blaise. There's actually a little church in France called St. Blaise of the Herbs, or St. Blaise of the Simples, as they used to call it. Those are at least four that I know of, plus Archangel Raphael.
If you read, like, Brothers Lives That Are Saints or any saint stories, you always hear, especially, like, the Easterns. Anybody that goes in the desert, like John the Baptist as well, they ate herbs. They'd only eat herbs. Or, like, Mary of Egypt only ate herbs, or, you know, something like that. And you think about going, in modern mind, maybe I'm generic blanket statement, going, man, that's got to be so bland. And, you know, because you're only thinking of, like, a couple things. You know, you're just, why would you just eat there? What talk about penance. But you read this stuff going, man, they were probably doing that one for healthy, but there was also a lot of benefits for eating herbs. So it wasn't just the penance. They were eating very healthy for their body, hence how they lived to 100 years old just eating an herb. Am I wrong on that?
No, and not only that, but some of them are very tasty. I mean, probably one of the main ways that herbs really became in common use was for essentially food and water preservation. I mean, you got to remember, in the ancient world, water was often fouled, and there was no way of preserving meat. So when they found that they could put sage or mint into the water, and it would purify it greatly. In fact, if you're ever in the woods and you're in a bad situation, I'm not going to recommend you do this on a regular basis, but you got to get some water out of a creek and drink it, and you don't have a way to filter it. If you can find some mint, it's so strongly antimicrobial that if you chew it up in your mouth and you drink the water, you're probably not going to get sick. You know? So that, as soon as somebody figured out how to combine herbs with water to preserve them, you know, just it clicks, right? Well, you can also take all these, like, you think about the wonderful salamis and all the great cured meats that are, like, my favorite thing on earth. They're flavored with sage, and they're flavored with oregano, and they're flavored with all these plants, mainly in the mint family, lots of garlic. Those are antimicrobial, those are antibiotic, that would keep the meat from spoiling. Ancient Greeks, they used to always scrub the tables with mint. And it aids digestion and all that. So, but you imagine, you're out in the desert, right? And you're looking around. Well, you got probably some purslane, portulaca. If you like okra, like I do, you know, being raised in the South, purslane is just like okra. It grows all over the place. You've got some thistles that are going to taste a lot like artichoke. Hey, that's not half bad, right? So, you know, you probably wouldn't do half bad. In fact, you know, like you think about the parable of the prodigal son, says he was eating the pods that were meant for the pigs. Those would have been honey locust pods. And honey locust inside has a natural caramel. So, again, not half bad. You can actually make beer out of honey locust pods. It's an excellent sugar substitute. And speaking of beer, St. Hildegard von Bingen is also the patron saint of brewers, because her knowledge of herbs, she advised adding hops to beer to preserve it. Before then, they were making what's called Groot, and it was using a whole different style of herbs. Another reason, like woohoo Wiccan type stuff, is associated with herbs is because, especially in England and France, the brewers were women. The ones who brewed the beer were women, and they wore tall, pointy hats. And when the beer was ready, they hung a broom over the door, right? And so our entire concept of a wicked witch is essentially a broom mistress from the Middle Ages. Well, they used to flavor their beer things like old Mirica Gale, sometimes henbane, herbs that were psychoactive. Often. And there were actually edicts passed by several religious figures and political figures after St. Hildegard introduced hops, saying, you're no longer allowed to put those herbs in there. You have to switch to hops, because it would put the people in a frenzy. Now, you think about a soccer game in England and these people go crazy just drinking modern beer with hops. Imagine if they're having hallucinations, right? So actually a lot of that kind of woohoo idea doesn't actually come through herbal medicine. It comes through beer brewing.
It's just the modern mind. I guess you just never would have thought of things like this. You're just worried about, you know, how much, what can we get at a grocery store? Which you hear about things going down. What, you know, the Beck was out there talking about EMPs the other day, and I'm going, well, they've been talking about that for a decade. But if you,
yeah,
I was in that mind. Well, I got to prep for, you know, 3 months, 5 months, 10 years. I got to go get Patriot Supply. And, you know, the more I dig into gardening and growing your own food, and now the herb books, going to just throw it in the back, and you know, EMP comes, who cares? You got to grow it in your backyard. It's forever. Yeah. Obviously, now
that's why
the spray in the sky that will kill our gardens, which that's a different story.
Yeah. Well, that's the way I grew up, so it makes sense to me. I guess I've written 3 books for preppers, Herbal Medicine for Preppers, Homesteaders, and Permaculture People, and Growing Your Survival Herb Garden. That's 2 of the main ones. The other one doesn't come to my mind right now. I've written 13 books. I can't keep the title straight, but that's really the mindset. It's like, you know, the grid could go down, obviously, or we could have another COVID lockdown or something, or there could be inflation, or we could get in a war or whatever, and the supply chains could be disrupted. And, you know, yeah, you can store food for a good long time, but it's like Jack Spierka used to say on the Survival Podcast, he'd say, after a while, you're down to beans and rice and rice and beans, you know. I'd much rather have a garden and just put up food seasonally, do a little hunting and fishing. Trapping is a great, I know it's controversial, but it's a great survival skill to know, and raise a little small livestock if you can. It's if you can keep a few backyard chickens, it's well worth it. Backyard rabbits is always a good idea. I put out I guess it was sort of a controversial article this morning through Mizio Day about, I've been running into, like, on Catholic Twitter and such, so many mostly college age women who claim that Jesus was a vegan. And I'm like, why do you think Jesus was a vegan? Well, I learned it in this class at this Catholic university I go to that my parents spent $100,000 on tuition, you know. And I'm like, well, why do you believe that? Well, my professor told me so. And so I sent him like a passage from Timothy, you know, and later years people will come saying not to eat meat. And that's like a sign of the Antichrist. But, you know, or to St. Paul saying you're not justified either by eating meat or not eating meat. But then as far as the topic of Jesus being a vegan, I say, well, he was Jewish. He ate the Passover meal. He ate lamb at least once a year. He couldn't have been a vegan. Well, what if he didn't eat the lamb? When he was resurrected, what's the first thing he asked for? A fish to eat. Mm-hmm. You know? And they're like, I don't know that. I'm just like, well, you know, you spent a lot on education, but you're not really biblically literate. So let me tell you now why, one, Jesus isn't a vegetarian or a vegan. 2, it's not a very healthy diet. You really do need some animal protein and fats. And 3, why it's actually not good for the environment. So in this article this morning I put out, I run through all these points of how industrial farming of soybeans and corn and all that actually is far more environmentally destructive and kills more animals than just raising a cow and eating it. I mean, if you've ever been on a farm, harvest is a bloodbath in the fields. I mean, seriously, there's so many critters that get torn up in those machines. And not to mention all the soil life. I mean, you know, that they kill all the microorganisms, the worms, the bugs, and all that. You may think, I don't care about that. That's actually, without them, we have no food.
Right.
You know.
Right.
So anyway, that's a little controversial, but yeah, I don't even remember where I was going. Oh, that was the point. you can grow a huge amount of food on a small space, especially using permaculture principles. And this permaculture systems that use every element to support other elements in the system. French biointensive gardening, that is incredible. It's double dug beds and really intensive planting, but that's always combining animals with plants on the same property because they're a cycle. You know, you can't remove one element. And but yeah, you can. In your backyard, you could probably grow most of the food you need. There's an old book that was even written in the like 1910s called 5 Acres in Independence. And they were expecting to raise, you know, 4 or 5 kids on just a 5-acre piece of self-sufficient property using just plain old technology of the time, not even the French biointensive or systems or anything. So, I don't worry too much about prepping per se. I'm more of a homesteader.
Man, if I could get 5 acres, I'm using about 5 feet right now. It seems you're lucky. Right. You put your mind to it, you can get creative with it. And
absolutely. Don't forget your vertical space.
Oh, yeah.
Vertical space. People always overlook that. They think everything's got to be planted in the ground. No, I mean, you can even like get containers and hang them from tree limbs. And imagine, or up a sunny side of a house. You can use parts of your roof. It's just amazing what you can do. And then don't forget the wild. Yeah, and the wild food all around us. I mean, people look at kudzu as this horribly invasive weed. And it is. Kudzu's the vine that ate the South. The leaves are protein rich, iron rich. The flowers can be made to make wonderful jams, jellies, and even a wonderful wine that smells just like grape and tastes just like a grape wine, more like a Concord grape, you know, type of more sweeter wine. The root, which can be the size of a man, they're huge roots, has all kinds of great properties. You can get starch out of it. You can use it for food. It actually has a unique quality of causing alcoholics not to crave alcohol. So we go around just trying to eradicate all this kudzu, you know. In Japan, some of the finest kimonos and fly lines are made from the fiber that comes from the kudzu vine, you know. We need to just figure out how to use what God gave us instead of trying to tear everything up and make a golf course.
I'm glad you mentioned the kudzu, because if you're right, if you haven't been to the South, kudzu takes over land.
Yeah,
there's little towns that are covered in kudzu, probably.
Let me tell you this real quick. That is such a fascinating story. The fellow that really introduced kudzu to the South was Channing Cope. He was a columnist for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. He wrote one of the first permaculture books called Front Porch Farmer, long before permaculture ever existed, right? The South was over-farmed. We had horrible erosion problems, and people were like literally starving to death, right? He finds out about kudzu. It's a leguminous plant. It's nitrogen fixing. It prevents soil erosion, and it is the very best hay or feed for cows and goats and such. And he proposes, why not plant kudzu and let the cows graze that? He comes up with a system to do that. It's in Front Porch Farmer, and it's brilliant. It literally could have saved all Southern agriculture. Unfortunately, the Army Corps of Engineers decided, hey, if that can prevent erosion, we should plant it on all the roadsides and creek beds throughout the South. And unfortunately, during Channing Cope's lifetime, the kudzu had eaten most of Georgia, and he died a hated alcoholic. People would come to spit on his grave. Yeah, I'm not kidding. But yeah, you just got to find the plants and use them as intended. If you had a herd of goats, even just a small herd, kudzu would never be an issue. Those goats are just going to keep eating it back, eating it back, eating it back. And you're saving money on food, and you've got, they're going to produce more milk because of all the protein in those kudzu leaves.
You just killed the feed or industry right there with just kudzu.
Yeah. It would. It absolutely would. And I'm like, nobody knows about it. I mean, it's amazing how quickly we lose knowledge from one generation to the next.
Well, that's what I brought up. I remember years ago going, there's got to be a usage for that besides covering up a town or covering up this area. I grew up in Cowpens. It's the city plant. I mean, you can't go anywhere in Cowpens without running into kudzu. But it goes back to what Kessel was saying. It's got some, you know, he's being sarcastic. It's like somebody decided to put this everywhere.
Yeah. Oh, it also makes great baskets. Really does. Kudzu vines, you want to cut them in the winter and just kind of bundle them up. And if you want to weave a basket, just take out the dried vine, boil it for a few minutes, and then it gets flexible. And you can strip it down. It's like pure white, or just leave the bark on. You can make beautiful baskets with it.
All right, so for somebody that's maybe watching for the first time going, you know, I never thought of any of this. I would like to get started in a sense or educate myself on it. What would your recommendation be for a newbie? I mean, I'm still technically, I call myself a noob, but somebody really green on it, no pun intended. What would you recommend them doing?
Well, let's see. If it's herbal medicine, definitely my website, either judsoncarroll.com or southernappalachianherbs.blogspot.com. Frankly, I think Southern Appalachian Herbs is a little easier to read online, but at the judsoncarroll.com, that's my Substack newsletter. So you can sign up for that. You'll get my podcast every week, two podcasts a week, plus a really in-depth article. Like I just put out an article, I guess it was yesterday, on the medicinal. One of the things we didn't even mention is how many trees have medicinal properties. So I've done a whole series on medicinal trees, medicinal shrubs. Sometimes those are on 7-14 pages long. So, I mean, it's really comprehensive. But my podcast, I've been doing it for about 3 years now. They're never more than an hour long, and you can learn a lot through that. And that's just Southern Appalachian Herbs podcast. It's hosted anywhere you can get podcasts, or you can go to my sites. If you're interested in my Catholic content, I put out daily gospel reflections, and I do the Uncensored Catholic podcast, where I usually talk about Catholic topics, but I will go off on politics quite frequently. And that's the Uncensored Catholic. That's also a Substack newsletter, or you can find the podcast wherever you get podcasts. And let's see, for permaculture, there's so many options on that. A couple of my books, like Herbal Medicine for Preppers, Homesteaders, Permaculture People, whatever the title is, Growing Your Survivor Herb Garden, will give you a lot of those principles. But if you want to get deep into a permaculture course, it's actually about 70 hours to really get heavy into it. Matt Powers does the best. He's a friend of mine, kind of hippie, kind of, you know, interesting guy, but brilliant. And his permaculture course, I highly recommend it. There are other courses. Bill Mollison started it in the 70s, doing these classes. You can find a lot of his content and Jeff Lawson's content just for free on YouTube. Bill Mollison's books are great. He was a crusty old atheist from Australia, so he's going to be very offensive. But he was very offensive. But there's really, let me think. John Seymour, his book, the title will not come to me right now. John Seymour's book on gardening, not getting into permaculture, but more the French biointensive. Yeah, that's fantastic. The Grow Network, Marjorie Wildcraft site. I've been a moderator in the forums. I just got word they're shutting down the forums, but I think her content is going to stay available. And she has classes on biointensive gardening. She has classes on permaculture basics, and they're usually very expensive. And her book is really good too. I think those would be all really good starting points.
Very good. And Justin, I think you're all over social media. So if you type in his name, figure out how to spell his names on his books, and you can type it, you'll find him on Twitter or on all the other media.
I got kicked off of YouTube for comparing Dr. Fauci to yogurt from Spaceballs, which I thought was funny. I mean, come on, merchandising. That's where the real money is, right? They finally let me back on, but in a limited capacity. And I got kicked off of Facebook at the very beginning of the COVID pandemic. No one had said it yet. Donald Trump hadn't said it yet. I said, you know, there's a bioweapons lab in Wuhan, China. What you want to bet this may have been either accidentally or purposefully come out of that lab? And like 10,000 people started screaming at me that I was a racist, and they kicked me that off, and I haven't been let back on.
Yeah. Everyone that said the stuff at first is immediately got the guillotine, and oh, wait, it came out to be true.
But yeah, I'm everywhere else. I'm on Twitter, I'm on Truth, I'm on Getter, I'm on Rumble. And but yeah, JustinCarroll.com or the Uncensored Catholic. Those are the best ways to get to me, I think.
Sounds good. Justin, I appreciate your time. And like I said, I got all the books. I'll have all the links below in the show notes. Again, just expand the description section. You'll see the links. Justin, appreciate you, man, and it was really cool when I found out, oh, he's a fellow Carolinian, so that's even better.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you having me on. Anytime you'd like to have me back, just let me know. And if anybody has any questions, if anything you want to ask me about herbs or gardening or anything, just shoot me an email, judson@judsoncarroll.com.
Sounds good. And definitely, I have 40,000 more questions to go for, but we need to, somebody's going to have to eat between now and then.
Right.